everyone. This is Alyssa Amoroso, and you may know me as Publicity on Instagram, but now I'm putting my phone down to chat with everyone from reality stars to fashion influencers to leading industry execs. We're going to be dishing on the things you don't see on social media. So turn your volume up because things are about to get juicy. This is the Publicity Podcast. Hello, my beautiful people. Happy Wednesday. Welcome back to the Publicity Podcast. I am your host, Alyssa Amoroso, and boy, do I have a show for you. I am interviewing Taylor Nolan. You may remember her from Nick's season of The Bachelor or Bachelor in Paradise, where she was engaged to Derek Paith, aka Peth. That's probably how you guys know it, but he did correct me once and told me it's Paith. So I will always say that moving forward. But anyway, that's besides the point. You probably know her from reality TV, but if you follow her on social media, you know that she is so much more. She is really incredibly smart, very woke. And I made a commitment to my followers and to myself to continue to amplify Black voices. And that is what I am doing. We have an extremely candid conversation, and I think you guys will really enjoy it. As promised, I am restructuring the podcast a bit, and I am starting every episode with a little about me weekly update. So if you are new here, I hope you stay and listen. It will just be a few minutes and you can get to know me. If not, you could just fast forward and get to the interview, but I do hope that you take this next few minutes to get to know me. And if you are returning, hey guys, what's up? Let's catch up. Okay, so what's going on in my life? What's basically going on is that I am eat, sleep, breathing The Vampire Diaries. I mean, I am freaking obsessed. So I watched this show back in college when it was really popular, and me and my friends were seriously so into it, but I haven't watched it since. So it was kind of like a one and done sitch. So I don't remember a lot of it. And the world was just feeling so heavy these last few weeks. And I really just needed a mental escape, and reality TV just wasn't doing it for me. It was like making me annoyed to see people out partying and drinking and hugging when I'm stuck inside in the queue. So I decided to watch The Vampire Diaries from the start, and holy shit, it was the best decision I've ever made in my entire life because I want to be a vampire. I mean, they are so hot. They are so fast. They live forever. They're all super fucking skinny. I mean, if all I had to do was drink and not eat, like, I would be amazing. I'm just so obsessed. So if you need a new show, you totally should watch. I mean, I've never in my life seen such a hot cast. Like, from the teachers to the students to the parents to, like, the crossing guard at the school playground. I mean, they are literally all drop dead gorgeous. Every guy, every girl. I'm obsessed. I don't even know who my favorite is because obviously my like long-term honey is Damon because he's so gorgeous. But then like Jeremy has the biggest glow up of all time. So hot. Even Matt does it for me. And don't forget Alaric, the history teacher. Alaric is maybe like one of the hottest men I've ever seen in my life. And I also found myself like really into Stefan the first few episodes. So literally I can't pick because every single person's so hot. So you could watch and report back to me and let me know who tickles your fancy because I'm pretty sure you're going to be like me and have a really hard time choosing. So yeah, I'm obsessed with The Vampire Diaries. I also watched 365 DNI. So it's a show. I mean, I'm sorry, it's not a show. It's a movie on Netflix. And I had a few friends texting me being like, oh my God, Alyssa, you need to watch this movie. It is Poland's version of 50 Shades of Grey. There's so much sex. And you're going to die. So and they told me how hot the main character was, the guy. So I'm like, okay, sign me up. Like, hot guy, a lot of sex, sounds right up my alley. I put it on. Okay, I can confirm, hot ass man, 100%. Like, he's smoking hot. But, like, everyone conveniently left out the fact that this guy is actual a psycho. Like, he kidnaps this girl, has pictures of her face blown up in his apartment, says that he's been looking for her across the world for 5 years. Like, what a freaking psycho. Also, spoiler alert, sorry. Okay, as if that's not creepy enough, he like forces her into doing sexual things with him. Granted, she looks like she's into it, but she wasn't in the beginning, and he like held her there against her will. It's like Stockholm Syndrome shit. Okay, and what pissed me off even more was he met her parents and he literally said that he had evil intentions for their daughter and that he was a gangster. And like, we just like glossed over that, like as if it's no big deal. Excuse me, my parents would never let me see this man again. And as if that's not bad enough, like the second half of the movie, she appears in this awful, awful blonde wig that is so obviously synthetic hair. You could literally see her bun bulging out the back of it. It was just like the worst acting I've ever seen. If you want to watch it purely for the sex and then not the rest of it, because that's literally the only good part. So that's my review on that. What else? Social life. I don't really have one because I'm in quarantine. I've been talking to some guys on dating apps, mainly Hinge. I've met a few. I met like this one really cute guy, but like, I don't really trust his intentions. And then I met this other guy who actually isn't my normal type, but he seems really sweet. And we're maybe going to go on a social distancing outdoors date type of thing. So yeah, I'll let you guys know if there's any updates there. But other than that, I'm literally just focusing on myself, focusing on walking, eating right, trying to sleep. I did not sleep well at all last week because I had my period. And I'm not scared to say that because I'm pretty sure there's not one guy that listens to this podcast. So yeah, for some reason, I went off birth control like a year ago. Don't know why I went off it. And yeah, I really don't know why, but anyway, so I'm not on it, and I basically feel like I'm back in high school where you used to get those, like, really bad periods, and you would have to go sit in the nurse's office and put, like, a heating pad on your stomach. That's where I'm at, so I give myself, like, 2 days a week of, like, a grace period where, I'm sorry, 2 days a month where I give myself a grace period where I'm like, okay, you have your period, eat what you want, cry all day long, watch TV, be lazy, don't work. So that was last week, and it kind of just made me like feel anxious this week because I feel like I was so unproductive last week. So this week I put my working hat on. I've been working around the clock, just trying to be the boss lady that I am. And that's really it in my life. There's not much going on because, again, we're in the queue, but I'm super excited that the podcast is back up and running. And yeah, here is an interview with Taylor. But before we get to that, I do want to plug one last thing. If you guys are new here, if you're not new, you need to join the Publicity Tribe on Facebook. It is a closed Facebook group. I am setting out to build the world's greatest group of women and men who are interested in talking about pop culture, dating, family life, whatever it may be. No topic is off limits. Let's create a diverse group of badasses where we could all come together and just lean on each other to be virtual BFFs. So if you want to join, I will put the link to request access in the notes section of this podcast, and you could just request access there. Okay, guys, that's enough for my little spiel. I told you I would keep it short and sweet, under 10 minutes. Now, here's my interview with Taylor. I hope you guys enjoy. Thanks so much for joining me.
I'm excited to chat. I know we've been trying to do this for quite some time, so.
I know, and I feel like now is the perfect time. I hit record so we could actually just even chat. I like to get to know people on air. I'll do a whole intro before and everything. But yeah. It's so funny because I was just listening to your podcast with Caitlin Bristow a few days ago. And some of the stuff that you were talking about, I was like, she is speaking my language. And I really wanted to get you on the pod because, you know, I made a commitment to my followers to continue to like amplify Black voices and speak out and do what I can. So I know that you're someone that speaks out and you don't hold back, and you're such a great resource for people. So I would love just like some advice, some tips. I would love for you, we could just start off by you even explaining just like, how have you been with everything? I know it's been so heavy and so hard.
Yeah, it's definitely been tough. being biracial, I have my own kind of racial trauma that gets triggered talking about all this stuff. You know, it's funny, even like, and everything that you just said, like one thing that sticks out to me is like me being a great resource. And I've been sitting with that a lot lately, because even as all this stuff has came up, you know, there have been some friendships that have really disappointed me and really hurt me. And being labeled as like a resource when it comes to racial and social justice education. And it's hard because it doesn't feel like I have a choice in a lot of this stuff, right? Like, it's been my experience. So like, I can speak to my experience, which is informational and educational for people. But at the same time, like, it's tough to talk about. It's tough to process. And it does take a toll. And especially when people haven't been listening, and now people are listening more, which is great. It's a great step forward, but it's definitely an interesting shift to process. And I mean, it's incredibly heavy, and I'm doing my best to take care of myself, make sure I'm just like eating meals, like the basics. I'm like, am I getting sleep? Am I eating enough? Am I drinking enough water? And am I getting exercise even? Like just the basic needs, which become really difficult when you are so emotionally laboring on a daily basis. And then it's like, yeah, you zoom out and it's like, that's literally what Black people have been dealing with for generations. And like, yeah, if it's difficult for white people right now to go through this awakening and like, you know, take care of themselves, it's like, yeah, like just imagine. Like it's a lot. So on top of COVID, on top of like trying to just maintain your day-to-day, you know, self-care, like it is a lot.
I totally can't even imagine, because I was feeling super stressed and sad and anxious and awful when all of this really started coming to light in the media. And I would have to check myself and be like, if you feel this way today, you're lucky. Yeah. Because people go through this every single day, their whole lives. And I feel like that's what a lot of white people have been feeling, and they're almost feeling so naive and dumb for being like, why didn't I feel this sooner?
Yeah. And like, again, I mean, I'm a therapist as well. So like the therapist in me is like, yeah, it is a lot for you. And like, don't invalidate yourself. Like when we compare our pain, that really doesn't do us any favors. But you know, I had a conversation with a girlfriend yesterday who's white, and, had this whole conversation with her where I was just like, look, like at the end of the day, like you're my friend. Like I still care about you. And I know that this is still a lot for you. And, you know, just like I was a part of your life when you became a mom, just like I was a part of your life when you, you know, decided to open up a new business, like just as I was there for those processes, like I'm still going to support you in this process as well. Like you don't have to be scared to talk to me or any of that, because it's like, you're still my friend. And while kind of to go back to my point that I don't think I actually made about being kind of labeled as like a resource, is like, it can feel a little like dehumanizing in a way, that it's like my value, like the reason people are finding value in me is because I'm a resource, mm-hmm. which is like, I hope that people, and I think I mentioned this at the end of Caitlin's podcast, if not, I know I talked about it afterwards, of like, it's great to see people wanting to amplify Black voices, but like, can we also amplify them without them specifically being of benefit to white people?
Totally. I think the way I think about it, sorry to cut you off. The way I think about it when I use that phrase, or when I think of someone like Rachel Lindsay, I think of you guys as a resource in the sense that you are outspoken and unapologetically yourself and share your opinions. Yeah. And it's so great to hear people who could like clearly discuss these things in a way that's easy for you to grasp. Like I feel that way when I speak to you, when I listen to Rachel, I'm like, wow, okay, I understand what they're saying. Sometimes when I consume like news or read articles, there's so many big words and all of these things, I'm still learning all of these phrases, and I'm like, I don't even know what this means.
What are these people talking about?
Yes, I'm like, am I following? I'm like so lost. So I think it's more like you guys were given this platform, and the way you're choosing to use your platform is what's really impactful.
Yeah, and again, in some ways a choice, in some ways not. But yeah, and I mean, like, in the other ways, like, of being a therapist, right? In some ways, I am an educator and I am a resource. So it's again, it's something I've been sitting with, where I'm like, parts of that feel icky, and other parts of that are very valid. But I think it comes down to like wanting to be seen and wanting to be valued, and my voice still wanting to be amplified, regardless if it's about Blackness or specifically of benefit to white people, that I think I want white people to sit with as well, to ask themselves, like, are they listening to Black voices that are about Black beauty and Black love and all of those things that aren't just educating them on, like, justice? You know what I mean? Am I making sense?
No, you are. And I wonder, something I heard you speak about a lot was Blackout Tuesday, and
yeah.
I, in my gut, felt like I shouldn't post something saying I am muting my profile. Like, I had such a visceral reaction to it. Like, it actually, like, my roommate, I kept being like, I feel sick over this because I feel like I have a platform and I want to do the right thing and I have eyeballs on what I'm posting, but I, in my gut, don't feel right posting this because it's just taking up space. And I decided not to post saying muted or anything like that. And then Blackout Tuesday came around and I saw some of the world's, like, biggest celebrities and people that I look up to posting black squares. So I was like, okay, so maybe my gut's wrong and, like, maybe I should post this. So I did. I posted the black square saying Black Lives Matter. And still, it just wasn't sitting right with me, and I wound up taking it down a few hours later. And I heard you talking about this, and I felt like your thoughts really reflected the way I was feeling. That I was kind of like, why do I have to post this to amplify Black voices and share new creators and share people when I should just be doing that? I don't need to, like, I felt like it was trendy to announce, like, hey guys, I'm going to be talking about Black lives today.
Yeah, no. The whole message, I think it was mixed around in a bunch of different ways. There were Black people that were posting Black squares, and it's like, no, you're not. No, that's not it. Like, we want you to talk. Like, that's not the point of this. So it definitely got mixed around. I don't think people really understood what they were posting. They just, again, it was trendy. They had FOMO. They felt guilty. As you were kind of saying, you start to feel like, well, weird. Like, these other people are posting it. So, you know, am I on the wrong side of this? And that's why I really ask people to, like, take a second and really think about responding versus reacting. Because when you just react to attempt to be anti-racist or to attempt to be an ally, typically that reaction ends up being performative. And it's out of trying to eliminate or protect yourself or relieve that feeling of shame. And that's not sustainable. Shame is not sustainable. And when you react in that way, you're not actually taking conscious steps to make sure that your impact is matching your intent. So I ask people to, like, sit with that shame for a second and really consider how you can respond thoughtfully. Maybe feel, you know, maybe if we can transition that shame of, like, I'm a bad person for not posting this, to, like, guilt of, like, oh, I feel like it might be bad if I don't post this. And to sit with that guilt and allow the guilt to motivate you to respond in a way that is your intention matching your impact, your impact matching your intention.
Yeah, I think that's something I keep hearing a lot about lately with impact and intention. And it's something that's definitely important. And I feel like my gut's always usually right. And moving forward, I'm just going with my gut, because had I gone with my gut from the beginning, I would have known the right thing to do, because genuinely I try to make decisions based on being empathetic and trying to understand and, you know, doing the right thing. So it was an interesting struggle that I was feeling with wanting to do the right thing, but then not wanting to look bad and not looking like I cared. And it was just really interesting. And I think there's come a lot of pressure with having a platform at the moment. And I previously have tried to amplify Black voices, whether it be spotlighting someone on my blog who was my gay Black best friend and talking about his life or doing things, but obviously it wasn't enough. And I'm curious to know, like, moving forward, what steps you think people could take, because we need to continue this conversation, obviously.
Yeah, 100%. And for me, the steps that people need to take are, you know, specifically when we talk about having a platform, is having what you want your platform to look like actually be a real reflection of your daily life. If your daily life is not matching what you are sharing on Instagram, that's going to tell me a few things about you. And it should tell you a few things about yourself as well. And it should tell your followers a few things about you. When we want to amplify Black voices on our platforms, yet don't actually have Black people in our life, yet don't actually support Black businesses, that's not sustainable. It's performative and it's going to be really short-lived and it's going to feel like, you know, it's basically for show of like, I'm amplifying, right? So I think one of the really important steps is making sure that like whatever kind of image or, you know, impact you want to have on your platform that hopefully is in alignment with your values, that you're taking steps so that that is also in alignment with what your daily life looks like.
So what do you think about, I'm just curious about this because it's something I've been asking myself and just to get another opinion. I feel like I want to promote Black businesses, but I don't necessarily feel like I need to announce like this is a Black owned business. I should just be shopping it, buying it. It's like, at what point, and again, this is just to each their own, but like, at what point do we continue to call it out or do we just live that way? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. And I think it's a balance. I do think that because there is such argument over whether or not Black lives even just matter to begin with, that it can be really powerful to say, this is a Black business. This is a Black-owned business, and I'm supporting it. I think that that can be really powerful because I don't want people to feel like, again, this is my own personal opinion, and like other people might have different opinions on this, but that I worry when we try to shy away from saying Black-owned or Black content creator, that we're doing so because it's almost like we feel bad that we're naming their culture, right? That we're naming their race.
Like, and we're still scared to speak up almost.
Yeah. And that saying Black feels like it's like a bad thing almost. Like I heard a content creator share that she thought it was that she wasn't allowed to say Black people, that she thought that was a bad thing and that she had to say African-American. And to me, if we feel like icky with saying Black people, like, I think it's time to look inward a little bit to ask yourself like what that's actually meant for you, what your image of that has been. And that by saying, yeah, it's a Black owned business, that it can be like uplifting. It can be powerful. It can be like Black is beautiful. Black is all these things. Black is smart. And it be this thing that's celebrated and not like, oh, you know, we should, you know, really like they're Black. So like we need to support them, you know, but more of like, yeah, like they're Black and they're fucking great. So I don't know if that makes sense, but I think it is a balance. I think if we were actually in a place of things being equal, it wouldn't be as important to specifically notify and label and say, this is a Black business. I mean, Black owners of businesses have literally like hid their faces from their company because they know that people will then judge the fact that it's a Black owned business and treat it differently. So I do think that it's helpful and powerful as a white person to say, I'm supporting the Black-owned business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about it because part of me was like, I don't want to seem like fake, like all of a sudden now I'm caring. But the thing is, now I'm more aware than I was in the past.
100%. And I think that that's part of like that's part of the learning of this, right? That like, it's okay to say that you didn't totally do this in the past, but that now you're wanting to. And I think the important thing of this is creating it as a balance, right? Like not one week of these are all the Black content creators, this is Black business I'm buying from this week, but that like, it just becomes a natural part of your day-to-day life. That's how it becomes sustainable. That's how I think we do move towards change. But I hear you that it feels like, you know, it's a fake act to be like, oh, well, now I'm this. But it's okay to acknowledge that, like, you didn't know these things before, that you benefited from, you know, the system in XYZ ways. And now to do that differently, this is your plan. These are your goals going forward. And then sticking to those and sharing a balance of all that.
Yeah, exactly. And it kind of goes back to the like impact and intention thing. Like my intention is to do it because I want to and because I think it's important, but I don't want my impact to come across like it's phony or forced or because it's in right now, because that's how I'm feeling with a lot of the internet right now. I'm like, do you actually care? Because I know what I'm doing at home. Like, I know I'm listening to podcasts and I'm reading books and watching movies and whatever it may be. But I'm like, are a lot of these people that are saying these things even like taking a look in at themselves? And maybe I shouldn't even be worried about that. But I think because I'm just consumed so much media being in the influencer space, like I think about it a lot when I see stuff.
Yeah, well, and I hope too, you know, there are some like really actionable things that people can be doing during this time that, you know, again, they don't necessarily need to share, but I also think why not share? It's if you really want your intention and impact to be in alignment, sometimes it is literally saying, this is where I'm at. This is what I want to come across. This is where I am. This is my intention. And, you know, there's, if you just do a simple Google search, right? Like even on Instagram, there are so many specific action steps for people to take of writing emails, of making phone calls, like systems that have been set up for us to, for it to be so easy for us to email and reach out, that in addition to listening to podcasts, right? In addition to consuming this media, that we can also be taking really active steps towards that change, because the education piece, the reflection piece, that's a long time coming, and now we are seeing things really kind of at the height of just fucking shit show universe, right? Like it's pretty at its peak. It might get a little bit worse before it gets better, but like now is the time that we do need to actually step up and do some like legitimate actionable things to make change. The education piece is important to do simultaneously. And that's also going to take a lot of time. That's going to take generations and generations. But again, like actually getting active, contacting your mayor, contacting, you know, the lawyers, just getting out there and really
showing up to vote.
Yeah. Register to vote.
Uh-huh. Seriously. Yeah, no, I hear you. I think also another thing that I'm seeing a lot of right now is television networks like ABC making swift moves to make decisions. You know, the whole Vanderpump Rules situation happened where four people were let go. Last night, someone from Siesta Key on MTV was let go, another person from The Challenge, and ABC saying that Matt James is The Bachelor. Like, all of these decisions are happening really quickly. And part of me is like, we can't fault them for finally taking action, because I see a lot of people online, because I consume tons of pop culture because I love it. I see a lot of people online being like, oh, this is too late. They should have done it years ago. And I'm like, okay, but they're doing it now. Like, we have to let people grow. So I'm curious, I mean, I know I just mentioned like five different scenarios, but I'm curious just to get your thoughts on all of this like quick action being done. Is it too quick without thought, or is it needed? Like, I kind of feel like they're damned if they do, damned if they don't.
Yeah. So I think there's going to be a lot of opinions for, and differing views on this area. I think the argument of, well, they should have done it a long time ago is kind of pointless, because what is the point of you even saying?
Yeah, they didn't. So move on.
It happens now. Would you rather have them waited another week? Like, yes. So, what exactly is your point? Like, we all know that these things are, like, they've been overdue, right? Like, we get that. So certainly maybe we don't need to overly praise these networks or these companies for taking action now, but, like, this is a step forward. And, like, I can acknowledge that. And while it would be great for them to, you know, actually lay out plans of, like, systemic change that they're going to make within their networks, I think is really at the root of these things, right? Because it's, well, where is the accountability? Where is the statement on, you know, that accountability that you did allow that person to stay on and you knew about this and it's been there. And in some ways it feels performative, right? In some ways it seems like it's to benefit their branding, but at the same time, when we talk about intention versus impact again, sometimes if the impact is really great, I'm like, sometimes I don't give a shit what your intention was. I don't care if it was to be performative, if it had a really great impact. Like, sometimes that's how it is for me, at least.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Because it's like, whatever, it's still a step in the right direction. It needs to be made somewhere. But I think what you're talking about the changes coming, like, even from deeper within, I actually, I think it was like 2 years ago. So it was a while ago at this point, but I was invited to a panel at Instagram, and it was about diversity and inclusion. And they had, like, Eva Chen and all of these people speaking. And I thought it was really fascinating, the conversation, and something that they said, and I've remembered this from 2 years ago because it really impacted me. There was a Muslim influencer speaking, and she said how a makeup brand wanted to come out with a line that was targeted towards Muslim women. But everyone on the marketing team and on the sales team that made the product were white women and white men. And when it hit market, a lot of, like, Muslim people were actually really offended by it. And she was saying how had they hired a Muslim consultant or had multiple Muslim people on their team, these issues would have never happened. And she really challenged people to, like, look at that. And when you are coming out with a new brand or saying a message, to look at the team that is putting it together. And I've, like, it's always impacted me because I'm like, light bulb, like, duh.
Yeah. It's not rocket science. I mean, again, this is where even, you know, where I'm saying for influencers, again, if we expand that term and we're like brands or companies, again, have what you're showing externally match what's actually happening in your daily life behind the scenes of the company, making sure that those things actually match and that it's not just, this is what we want to put out, but this isn't actually what our lives or our behind the scenes look like.
Totally. And I had one of my Black followers reach out to me when I was posting stuff during that blackout week period, just posting resources and stuff. And she just gave me some advice. And I thought it was really just like, she wasn't even being constructive. It was more just like, maybe also take a look at this. Like, she was just helping me try to navigate things. And I really appreciated that. So I wanted to, like, say something on my story, and I wanted to make sure I was being sensitive. So I messaged her and I was like, do you mind if I send you something before I put this out? I want to get your opinion to make sure it's not insensitive and I didn't, like, say anything that was incorrect. And she really appreciated that I went to her. And it was because of that example with the Muslim influencer that I always think, like, I want to consult people or ask them if they're open to helping, because like, as a white woman, who am I to pretend like I know it all?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's exactly like, you don't have to pretend like you know it all, because you don't. And so to own that, I think, is super powerful. But also, you know, you having someone who is a person of color, who is Black, to kind of review that and give you input. I think there's a few things I want to point out on that dynamic. One, you are taking active steps to make sure that your impact is matching your intention in doing that. B, that you were actually open to even getting that feedback from her in the first place, and that you listened, is super important, because she did not have to go out of her way to share her emotional labor with you, to educate you on that. But the fact that you were open to it and didn't, you know, minimize her or combat what she was saying, and like trusted her and allowed her opinion to be valuable and matter for you, is huge. And I think that's something that a lot of white people misstep when they're trying to say something helpful and, you know, get corrected or receive other input from typically a Black woman who is trying to help, that then they're just like combative and they're like, well, no, like this is what I meant and blah, blah, blah. I'm not a bad person. And it's not about any of that. It's not about any of that. Like, set that aside and be open to that. So I think that's great that you were able to have that exchange to her, and, you know, that she was open to even lending her emotional labor in that way. And I definitely encourage in instances like that, that you Venmo her, that you're like, you know what? Thank you for that. You didn't have to do that. And, you know, I appreciate this exchange.
Yeah.
Big, big supporter and proponent of, you know, white people paying not just for, like, not just donating to Black organizations and whatnot, but to actual Black individuals as well, especially when, white people are, you know, benefiting from racial education from them.
That's interesting. I never thought about something like that. It's, yeah, it's true though, because yes, like I had asked her if she would mind or wouldn't, but I just felt like in that instance, like you said, people need to have more Black people in their life if that's not the way that they live. So I was like, you know, I have a handful of Black friends, but not many. My friends are mostly white. Let's be honest. Like, that's, I grew up in New Jersey, very Italian, everyone's white, yeah, like in, yeah, the town that I came from. But through living in Manhattan for the past 7 years, I mean, I've met more Black, lesbian, gay people in all walks of life than I ever have. And I really feel like my experience meeting people has changed my perspective, because I did grow up in a predominantly white town with, yeah, like a non-diverse school system. So I feel like just trying to meet more people, and that's how I feel like my eyes have personally been open to people's struggles from listening to people that I know. So I guess it's kind of like, if people don't know anyone that's Black in their life, or I'm sure everyone knows someone, but if they're not close, if they don't consider a Black person a friend, what do you recommend? Like, do they try to befriend someone? Do they listen to podcasts? Like, how could they get informed and hear about their life experience?
So there's a lot of ways to get informed, right? Mm-hmm. Google's free. Yeah. and that's always where I'm like, Google's free, but if you don't want to use Google, then pay Black content creators. Venmo them. But I think when it comes to like actually inviting Black people into your life and into your social circle, recognize that that might not be a safe space for them. Like, they might not want to be your friend, because your social circle might not be a safe space. And honestly, that like trust has to be earned. Like, yeah, Black people have been, rightfully so, how do I put this? Even in situations of friendship, even in relationships that are considered friendships, there's still, I'll just speak personally to, yes, this, there still is a level of distrust. I've had friends who were supposed to be my best friends and then went behind my back, would call me the N-word, and then would end up actually saying it to me over the smallest of things. So it's hard to feel like that's actually a safe space. You know, white people intentionally have to step outside of their social circle to enter Black spaces. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that white people should really sit with, because there's not, like, Black people don't have to do that. Black people are constantly in white spaces. Black people are constantly around other white people. And I think if you really do look around, there likely have been Black people in your life that you've completely passed by, that you've dismissed, that you've tokenized maybe, that you found unrelatable, that maybe you were intimidated by, right? So I think come to the terms of the fact that there likely have been Black people in your life that you have passed by. Now is probably not the time to like reach back out to them and be like, hey, by the way, I'm doing this, this, and this, and you know, wanna be friends? Mm-hmm. Probably not the time. I think right now in general is a weird time to make friends because of COVID.
Oh yeah.
But you know, I think that there are ways still online that we can communicate our support, that we can communicate our care, that we can invite people into our space knowing that they might not want to and accepting that. You know, I think I've heard stories even of people like checking out at the grocery store and there being like a Black person there and just being like, your life matters. And like, I've seen things like that where I'm like, that's really sweet. And
I know I've read stuff like that too. And it's impactful. It's funny because you were saying something and it sparked a memory in me how, you know, oftentimes like, there might be like one, as they call it, token Black person in a crowd of white people. And when I was working in PR a few years ago, I found myself often in situations where I was the only white person in a room because of the industry that I worked in. I was with a lot of rappers and athletes, and I would find myself sometimes where I was literally the only white person. And I remember thinking, it's rare, it is. And I remember thinking the first time I like looked around, because I didn't really think anything of it because it was comfortable for me because that was the way I worked. And I remember looking around one time and being like, I'm the only white person in a room of like 100 people. And I checked myself and was like, this is how Black people from my high school must have felt. This is how Black people from my college must have felt. It was like the first time where I could put myself in the other person's, I didn't even feel uncomfortable. Like, it had nothing to do with me feeling any sort of way because people couldn't have been nicer. But it was just the first time where I could almost kind of, like, slightly see myself in the situation of being like, I'm the only one that looks different here. And I had to just say to myself, like, wow. Like, take it in and be like, that is what people go through every single day in work situations, in school situations, everywhere they go. And yeah, I think until you can kind of put yourself in situations, you'll never understand, but it will help open your eyes to some extent of some level of like empathy or just opens your eyes, you know?
Yeah. And I think that because white people typically don't have to be in spaces that aren't predominantly white, that they don't ever consider the power of representation. It feels really fucking stupid to even explain it. So like, I don't think I'm even gonna, because it's like, it is so powerful to see other people that look like you in positions of power, to have the main characters and stories that look like you, to be relatable. That piece is so important. And so I definitely think it is helpful that white people do put themselves in situations where they might be the only white person. Because again, you know, to the people that want to use the like, well, we're all human. Like, we don't have to be Black or white, or like, we're just all human. Like, imagine if you never saw anyone else that looked like you in politics, in your education system, in the romance movies. Like, just imagine if there was not a single person that looked like you. Like, what would that tell you about yourself? Oh, and then add on top of that, actually, that the one time that you do see yourself represented, it's being aggressive or being angry or getting hung or murdered by a police officer and no one doing anything to help you, right? Like, just think about that representation for a little bit, and I feel like you'll understand why it is important.
I mean, even just hearing you say that, it's impactful. It made me, like, I, like, had to take a deep breath because,
yeah,
it's
hard to sit with.
Because it's like, how could people, I don't understand how people can't hear something like that and not feel affected personally, but that's just their loss because they clearly are living an awful life.
It's all of our losses because people can't see that, they continue to uphold the system that benefits them and oppresses others and leads to just this continuation of bullshit. Awesome. So it's
so true.
You're so right. So I want to talk a little bit about your experience in Bachelor Nation. It's no secret that there's not a lot of diversity. There hasn't been. Did you feel, like, did you notice it when you were on Nick's season? Like, did you feel like, oh, wow, I'm different than some people here? Or was that environment comfortable? I'm just curious what your experience with race was.
I mean, I was essentially pitted against the epitome of white privilege, of a white, blonde, rich, privileged girl.
Yeah.
The most.
You're right. Wrong in the most disruptive, unhealthy behaviors. And I was the, quote, bad person.
Yep.
So, yeah, race definitely played a role in my experience on the show, in terms of how America viewed me, in terms of what my edit was, in terms of what was actually aired of me, 100%.
Yeah, when you put it like that, you're, again, sometimes we're, like, I'm blind to these things because in my head I'm like, oh, she's just a cast member. But you're right. Like, you literally couldn't have been pitted against someone that was... Yeah. You said it right. I don't even need to,
The epitome of white privilege and not having to ever take accountability for behaviors. They literally aired her paraphrasing Make America Great Again with her name in it. And that statement alone is rooted in white supremacy and rooted in, you know, go back to where you came from and we're going to make America, you know, just fantastic, like the old days. For who? For who though? So it definitely felt like it played a role. You know, had I been 23 years old with my master's as a therapist on this show, you know, giving my input when asked as I did, as a white woman, I think I would have probably been perceived a little bit differently, regardless of my tone, regardless of if I had been more combative or more confrontational even. I think it probably might have gone a little differently. I was tone policed. It was a rough ride, to put it lightly.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, like what you said, it's so true. Like, there's no arguing it. This is...
Yeah, and I think for people, like, this might be hard to hear as well. And I mean, I've talked to other, like, Bachelor people who've expressed, you know, like, really disliking me on my season. And today, thinking back to that, and with everything that they know now, looking at that situation... And being able to acknowledge that, like, that you might not consider yourself racist, right? Which is a whole other thing, but that's a certain, like, level of microaggression that even though you might disagree with someone's behavior, they look like you, or they represent white privilege, which represents power, which represents success, which is also a vision you want to see yourself in, that you choose to uphold that. And not just uphold it, but also bash someone else who doesn't look like you, who is being, I think I was quite firm in my wording. Like, I didn't question myself. I was very sure of myself, which can come across intimidating. And it wasn't relatable for people. And like that alone, I want to be like, look, I might not be your cup of tea and that's totally fine. But like, if you were going to go out of your way to bash me, or you were going to go out of your way to uphold this other person, like, really take a look at what was at play there for you, because there's probably layers to that that feel uncomfortable, but it's microaggressions.
Yeah, because it's interesting when you say this, I think back to white women in the franchise that are outspoken and speak their mind, and they are held on a pedestal.
Who legit, and are in this last season even, are like, I'm really smart, like, he'd be stupid to not choose me, like, meanwhile, I'm just, like, stating facts. Not once was I like, I'm the smartest person here. Like, he'd be an idiot to not pick me. But when a white woman, again, this sense of female empowerment.
Yep, you're so right.
So just for white women, that as a biracial woman, as a Black woman with a degree and an education, that for me to be, like, literally just to say factually what I am and what I have, somehow comes across as this, like, well, no, like, she needs to be put in her place, or like, she thinks she's better than everyone else. And it's like
what?
That's called projection.
Yeah. Yep. No, you are so right. You're even opening my eyes to more than I didn't even realize, like, in regards to your season, because it is so true. We look at people like, even like Caitlin or Hannah, or who like speak their minds, and everyone's like applauding them, like, you go girl, yell at him, tell them off. And then you say something and everyone's like, oh my God, like, she needs to learn her place.
Yeah. And it's people pick and choose, right? Like, for Rachel, for example, right? Like, people did love Rachel. And again, she had the age part was very different, right? Rachel was in, I think she was in her 30s at the time. So that deemed her worthy of more respect, right? Mm-hmm. People felt guiltier not giving Rachel support as a Black woman, knowing that the show struggles with diversity. Mm-hmm. And when we look at colorism, white people kind of felt more inclined to be like, no, like, this Taylor girl, like, she's not shit, but like, we're gonna look really shitty if we don't support Rachel, who's a lawyer and really nice and all these things, right? She had to be like all these things, and people still give her shit.
Yeah.
But she had to be this like perfect concoction for people to support her. And if they had shown, you know, greater facets of herself, that might have not worked. I don't know.
But. And even Rachel then, like, yeah, like, even she had her fair share of shit and still does. I'm just shocked by everything. Like, I've seen a few Bachelor people say in interviews that when they spoke out about all of this, they lost thousands and thousands of followers. And so
that literally has been my life from day one. Like, 2 years ago, I got really specific in talking about white fragility, lost thousands. Anytime, like, with Trump, we talk about Trump, lose thousands. Like, talk about being biracial, lose thousands. And like, the pettiness in me comes out because this is the first time ever that I'm gaining followers because I talk about these things. Mm-hmm. When on a regular basis, I lose thousands because I talk about sex, because I talk about race. And this is why white influencers, other people from the show, don't talk about these things, because people that follow them like to use it as like a weapon of, well, I'm going to unfollow you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? That's fine. I'm not going to change my message and like pander to being able to work with brands. Like, this is my platform. I have a responsibility. I want this to be an authentic space. I'm going to talk about the things I want to talk about. And the people that, you know, value that, the people who vibe with that, are going to show up here, and I'm going to value that.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I mean, I don't want to keeping you. I could talk to you all day because literally, like, it's just so easy to talk to you. But I do want to let you go. Before I let you go, first of all, thank you so much. I think just even coming on here and, like you said, giving your time, I think it really speaks a lot about your character and your commitment to all of this. And thank you for helping me obtain my commitment to trying to amplify Black voices and give my followers some, you know, something to learn, something to listen to. So I really appreciate that. And also, I mean, could you tell everyone just a little bit about your podcast? Because I absolutely love what you're doing over there. And you're like talking about sex and talking about all these taboo topics. And I really commend you for just like really just not giving a shit and just being yourself.
Yeah, it's been a process getting there. But yeah, these days I'm very like, nope, this is me. This is how I'm showing up. Like, vibe with it or don't. I'm tired of like apologizing. I'm tired of, you know, trying to convince people. I'm tired of people tone policing me. But yeah, whenever people are open to having the conversations, I'm like, all right, let's talk about it, which is really cheesy because that's the name of the podcast. It's called Let's Talk About It. And cover mental and sexual health, social justice, any kind of taboo topic that comes my way. If it's an interesting guest and an interesting story, I always want to share it and give people a little bit of a different perspective and shine like the spotlight on things that don't necessarily make it into our mainstream platforms or even education or news. But the best place to find me is going to be on Instagram at Taymocha, TAYMOCHA. And yeah, new episodes of the podcast come out every Thursday.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Taylor.
Yeah, thank you.